My name is Rich Honey. I'm here with George Sherman. Today is April 2nd, 2005. Okay, George, what was your life like before the war?
Just normal routine, just
You were a mechanic at a dairy right before the war started. Right. Before that, you went to high school and trade school, correct? Did you grow up in Kansas City?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see, were you single or married before you went into the service?
Single.
Okay. How about any political leanings before the war?
Not much. Didn't know much about it. Just out of school, so.
Okay. How about your family? What would you say their political leanings were towards?
Democrat.
They're Democrats. Okay. I know you said your father was in World War I.
Right.
What did he do in the war?
Aircraft mechanic, 96th Aerial Bombardment in France.
Okay. Did his experience affect your perception of the military?
Yeah. He was sick quite a bit, and I just didn't want that to happen to me yet.
And that was related to his service in the war?
Pretty much, I think it was. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah. Okay. How did you feel about Germany and Japan before you went into the service?
Well, just out of high school and studying about Germany and Japan, did not like what Germany was doing to the other countries, but no opinion of Japan at the time.
Right. How about how the U.S. was, how the U.S.'s stance before the war? Did you have any feelings about that?
No, not much. The only thing I was really interested in was what was the USS Panay sinking in China.
Okay. Where did you get your information from?
Mostly I got it from the radio and the Kansas City Star newspaper.
Okay. Do you remember kind of what their leanings were?
No, not that I remember.
Just kind of facts and
right.
What's going on. How about your ethnicity? What's your ethnicity? Are you Irish or Italian?
Mostly English.
English, okay. Did that have any effect on your views towards the war?
No.
One side or the other? Okay. Let's see. Where were you and what were you doing when you found out that Pearl Harbor was attacked?
Getting ready to go to church. Couldn't believe it.
How did you feel about Japan after you heard about Pearl Harbor?
After what?
Said after you heard about Pearl Harbor, what did you think about Japan?
Well, I just didn't much care for Japan, so don't.
Okay. So your initial response was just
I'd more or less just believe what it happened.
Okay. How about your family? Was your dad?
Well, they pretty much disbelieved too, because, it was quite a shock.
Yeah. I think it was for the whole country. How about your community? Do you remember anything?
I don't know.
Specific, like when you went to work?
Or? I didn't have time to be around the community because dad was sick pretty much and in the hospital quite a bit, and I had to work. Had to work and go to school.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't time to just see anybody else.
Just the people at work.
Huh?
How about Jeanette Rankin? Did you know?
I never heard of her until I came here and started joined the Museum of Women's History.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard of her before that.
Okay. So, you said you were drafted.
Right.
How'd you feel about getting drafted?
I was looking for it. I just figured it was going to be, so there wasn't much doing the fighting.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't fighting against it.
Did you assume that you were going to be a mechanic when you got enlisted?
Well, I was hoping so, yeah.
Okay. Let's see. How many other people did you know that were drafted or enlisted?
A brother after me, and then I don't know, probably 10 or 12 from the church.
So a lot of the young men that that you knew. What was your what was the general feeling towards everybody getting drafted? Did you think it was
nothing special? I mean, I just knew it was going to happen to us.
Yeah.
No way to fight it.
Okay. Did you know anybody that evaded the draft or anything like that? Okay. How about your family's reaction to you getting drafted?
Well, I belong to the Church of the Brethren, and of course they were against war. But there was a little bit of conflict. I mean, the family thought I ought to go and do the duty, and the other side thought, you know, should stay or protect conscientious objectors, which I had one brother-in-law which did.
Did you consider doing that yourself?
I considered it, but yet, you know, I mean, it's kind of borderline. You don't know really what to do, so I just went ahead and went into the service.
Yeah.
Because some of the others of the church had already done it.
And those are the Church of the Brethren?
Church of the Brethren.
Okay. So, you got drafted. Where did you do your basic training?
I went Fort Knox, Kentucky for 3 months of basic and then 3 months auto mechanic school.
Okay.
And then to Camp Camel for a holdover camp.
And was your basic training what you expected, or did you have any?
Oh, yeah. I'd already seen pictures and all. And some of those are written back about.
What was the hardest part of basic training?
Hardest part, probably calisthenics.
Really?
Yeah, because it was hot in September and it was real hot. And I passed out one day because of it. But I wasn't alone. I mean, there were several others that got sick that day too.
Let's see, while you were in basic training, were you kept informed of what was going on in the war? Or?
No, most of the time what they did, they tell us not to caution us about the dangers to the troops with the loose talk and the loose lips sink ships, things of that nature.
Okay. How different was military life from your civilian life?
Well, just do what you're told, and then summer camp, so I expected similar conditions.
And did you like having that kind of regiment to your life?
No, not particularly, because I've been working and everything and had freedom to move around.
Okay. How'd you feel about being away from home?
Yeah, I missed the family, missed the girlfriend, mom's cooking, and sometimes it'd be especially lonely when we didn't get mail.
Okay. So besides mail, did you have any other contact with your family or anybody at home?
Well, mom and dad and girlfriend came to Louisville twice, and I got 1 3-day pass at about the end of the basic training to go home. I was took 22 hours on the train to go from Louisville to Kansas City, and then I got to be home by about the same amount of time before I had to catch the train and go back. So it wasn't any. Really, wasn't any time, you know, to be to find out anything.
And how long did your basic training last?
3 months.
3 months. And that was the basic training, like the basic, and then the automotive school as well.
No, that's 3 months of automotive. Besides that.
Okay, after that. Okay. Let's see. What do you remember most about your basic training experience?
I don't know, we had one thing that really sticks is they were trying to teach us to lead our shots with the right, and they had a little model airplane flying around on a wire, and we were trying to shoot them. That was one thing I remember. I mean, you know, it stuck to mind. Other things, of course, we practiced. They had a 22 caliber rifle stuck down the barrel of a 37 millimeter gun, and we were used that for indoor practice. But it isn't a 37 millimeter.
Were you a pretty good shot?
Well, I don't know. I mean, about average, I guess.
Yeah.
Although I did have, sent overseas as listed as a sniper when I went overseas. But I didn't say that. But that was what the listing they told me was.
So they said you were going over as a sniper and not as a mechanic? Is that?
Well, I sent over, the listing went over as a sniper.
Mm-hmm.
Although later on I went back to the mechanic rating. But
oh, okay.
Just, I don't know what something they had to have, but it went, a classification difference they had to have or what.
Huh.
I don't know why.
You didn't do any sniper activity?
No.
When you were there? Okay. Let's see, what did you like least about basic training?
Well, I think maybe it was a guard duty at the prison complex at Shenango, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to be temporary barracks leader there because had a lot of guys would go AWOL up there. And so the barracks sergeant, he'd have to go after the people. So I'd be barracks leader while he was gone.
Mm-hmm.
But they put on guard duty with a 12-gauge shotgun and one shell. He said, you got to make it count. You know, that's not a very good feeling.
So these guys went AWOL. What were they out doing usually?
Well, most of them headed for home.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You had to go back to wherever they were from?
I guess so.
Bring them back.
That seemed to be where most of them went.
Interesting. What did you guys do for recreation while you were in basic training?
Well, occasional picture show, and then, like I said, the one 3-day pass and the 2-weekend passes, and then most of the time we were had duty about 7 days a week. So we didn't have time for any activities.
Right. What was it like meeting all these different people from all around the country?
Well, it wasn't much different than being at home. I mean, you meet new people at home, so you don't meet.
Yeah.
You know, meet somebody else different doesn't make any difference.
Was there any kind of tensions that created meeting
No.
these people? How about, did you have any previous perceptions of certain people that, you know, meeting them kind of changed?
No.
Okay. How well do you think you were trained as far as going into combat?
Well, I think we had pretty good training. We had a good unit, had a good commander in Fort Knox, and I think we had pretty good training for everything that we were doing.
Okay. Do you feel like you were mentally prepared to go?
Well, yeah, I think we had good training. They told us what to expect. There wasn't any beating around the bush. It was downright, you know, straight out what to expect.
Yeah, what were some of the things they said that you should be looking for?
Nothing. They just general merchant, everything in general, you know. But they didn't leave any hidden corners or anything like that.
Right. How about physically? Were you in pretty good shape?
Yeah. We had plenty of basic training, kept in training all the time.
Okay. You already mentioned some of the shooting that you did. How about some of your other training while you were there? What was that like?
Well, in a truck, when you teach you to drive a truck, they'd park you on a hill and then put an egg behind the wheel, maybe about a foot back, and you weren't supposed to let it roll back.
Mm-hmm.
When you started off. You cracked that egg, of course, you lost.
What kind of truck was this that you were?
A 2.5 ton.
Yeah. And I know that you mentioned you were a truck driver for a while you were in there. That's the kind of truck we drove. Was it convoy type?
Oh, everything.
Trucking? And
convoy, single truck stuff.
Okay. How about the automotive school? Was there anything you didn't know when you went in there, since you're already a mechanic?
No, of course I grew up as a mechanic, so I was born in my dad's garage above it. So I already worked in it and played around it, so I knew it wasn't anything, you know, it was new to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been working at the trade, so.
Was there a lot of diesel that they used? Like the tanks weren't those diesel?
No,
were they diesels?
No, it was all gasoline. They
all gasoline engines?
And that was diesel then.
Really? Huh. Okay, so the tanks, those were gasoline engines as well?
Yeah. The ones that we had aircraft engines in them.
Oh, okay.
The rotary engines.
Let's see. So, how long did it take you to get to, did you go to Africa originally?
Went over to Africa on the USS Vanzeline,
mm-hmm.
which is a luxury liner.
Okay.
And then when I went to Oran, and then we were there 4 days where they issued us our arms. And we cleaned the Cosmoline and all off the arms, and that was what we had to work with then.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sent us from Oran to Bizerte on the USS Savannah, which is another luxury liner.
Okay. And then you went first to the Provisional Trucking Battalion, the 2642nd.
Right.
What did you do then in that battalion?
Well, when we got in there, they had just gotten... This is getting started. They drew 50 trucks out of ordnance, and they wrecked 30 some of them on the way back to the area. They had inexperienced drivers, and they didn't know what to do with them, you know. They mm-hmm. couldn't handle them, so they didn't have any real truck drivers in the group. They'd all been infantry, most of them.
Right.
They had... Three of us repaired 100 tires in one day. We set up an assembly line method. One man broke them down, knowing I patched them, and another man put them back together. So we had quite a stack, and they almost went out as fast as we repaired them.
Jeez.
That's the kind of equipment we had. I mean, it was all junker stuff.
Really? Mm-hmm. How about the tools that you guys have? Were they good tools, or were they just...
Tools we had were pretty good. I mean, we had I remember we had two hammers and a set of opened-end wrenches and a set of socket wrenches, nothing bigger than a 1-inch. And then we had two or three different kind of pliers. And the tank mechanics had a little bit different kind of a tools than what the truck mechanics did. But we all had those toolboxes about 2 feet long and foot wide with the tops folded, tops open,
mm-hmm.
and little bucket handles, bale handles.
And that, those had all the tools that you would
well, need? That's all we had. Some of the heavy tools, if we needed them, we could draw them off the ordnance truck.
Okay, so besides your toolbox, what other gear did you have to carry around with you?
None. You didn't carry anything more with you. Up your rifle sometimes.
You just had your rifle?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have a handgun or anything like that? How much did it weigh, all your stuff?
How much did I weigh was in there? About 150 when I went in.
Right. How much did all your equipment weigh that you had to lug around with you?
Oh, I don't know. Probably about 30 pounds, I imagine. We could, a lot of times, some of the... tanks carrying tools, and if one of them was knocked out, sometimes we'd get some extra tools.
Mm-hmm.
And we could trade around. I mean, there was no nothing said about not trading tools around, so somebody would have two or three of a kind of wrench and trade them back for something else that you could use. And we could trade them around.
Did you ever have to work on any of the other Allied vehicles, like British stuff?
Yeah, we had some British Jeeps for a while.
Mm-hmm. Were those much different from...
Yeah, and we had some Army Ducks assigned to us for a while, and that's like a 2.5-ton truck with a... It would float, made like a boat.
Oh, yeah.
But the sides were higher.
Mm-hmm. And were those... Do those have guns on them and everything? Or?
Oh, yeah, they had... Well, no, they... When we had them, they were just for carrying cargo.
Oh, okay. What would you say was the one thing you worked on the most?
Probably 2.5-ton trucks.
Yeah. And what was usually just regular maintenance on those, or was
yeah.
there specific things that would break on them?
Oh, they have a maintenance schedule on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so pretty much we stayed to the maintenance schedule.
Yeah. So you guys run a pretty tight ship as far as maintenance and keeping everything running?
I'd say that our outfit did a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm. Did that reflect on when it went out into battle? Did more of your stuff come back versus maybe?
Oh, yeah, because they know how much they could depend on. Most of our trucks came back pretty good. I mean, they didn't break down out on the road all the time.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have to improvise or create a tool or a method, like you mentioned, with the truck tires?
Oh, yeah, we made tools all the time.
Like what?
Oh, just some kind of special wrenches, you know, fit, make a fitting. Maybe some kind of a boulder, and that would be hidden.
Mm-hmm.
And have to make a special tool to reach in and get it.
Right. And that was just kind of stuff you already knew how to do from being grown up doing that. How about you mentioned you were in charge of a crew. How experienced was your crew before they came in?
Oh, most of them had just puttered around vehicles, and then they came into service while they'd were on regular maintenance duty then, but most of them were not fully qualified to turn loose and do something on their own.
So you had to kind of watch over them?
And see what they
do. Was there ever an incident where something didn't get tightened or wheel flew off or something like that?
No, we never did have any trouble. We had one of the maintenance boys one day took a half track out to road test it. And when he was out, one of the trucks came off. It had a big downhill grade and a curve. And he was sitting there, white as a sheet, as he passed the maintenance area. But I could see him, and he was really scared. I can't say the rest of it. But he went on about a mile beyond the maintenance area before he got stopped, because he wouldn't have had any braking. So when he lost the track, he had no braking.
Did you ever have to, you had to go out into the field and bring stuff in. Were you ever caught in battle when you were?
Well, we got shelled several times.
Mm-hmm.
One time, we were on a rocky knoll, and had the track came off of a tank. We were out there putting it on. We had a warrant officer with us, and the first time he'd been up into combat. So when the first shell came in, everybody kind of scattered to hunt shelter. And last time we saw him, he was going over about 250-foot straight-up cliff, and he didn't come back to the company area for a week. When we got back, when we got ready to go back to the company area ourselves, we couldn't find him. We just reported to the captain. He just kind of laughed. We didn't see him. When he got ready to go home, while we made him an award and took a lid out of a number 10 can, guys had a pair of some parachute silk, and the welding shop made a great big safety pin out of welding rod. We lettered it above and beyond. He knew what it was for, and he packed up with his stuff to go home. He said, "I deserve that."
What was involved in putting a tank tread back on? Is that a pretty easy thing to do, or?
You have to break the track,
mm-hmm.
and then pull the track up to the bogey wheels, and then get the first set of bogey wheels rolling across it, then you can do pretty good.
Yeah.
You have to pull it backwards. Normally we had to pull it backwards on the truck.
That's, did you have to use a, if it was still running, I guess you could just back it up, but was there anything that could pull it?
No, it would pull itself. You had to hook onto it and drag it.
Okay.
See, where you just have track, you just have tracks on one track, and the other side would be, the rocket wheel would be turning up free.
Mm-hmm.
So, unless you could get the track hooked up on the rocket wheel, which we tried to do, well then it would pull on up on its own.
How big of an issue was sand when you were doing repair? Sand. Was there a lot of sand around when you could imagine it?
Mostly where we were, there wasn't. Although they had to clear in the air filters all pretty regular.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there'd be a lot of blowing dirt.
What would you say was the most common repair you had to make on a vehicle?
Most common maintenance?
Mm-hmm.
On the wheel vehicles, most common maintenance was the wheel packs. They made sure that they were all rolled and greased regularly. And the constant velocity joints and all that were checked and greased.
Mm-hmm.
And the on the tanks, probably the track was probably the worst part of it. What happened, the crews were supposed to keep the tracks tightened up. And they failed to do that, and that's when they threw a track.
Right.
They get out in soft ground or out there on that, like on that rocky knoll, and they throw a track then. And getting them back on track would be the main thing.
How would you say the quality of Army vehicles was compared to civilian ones you worked on?
Oh, they were all right. I mean, there was, in fact, there wasn't that much difference between working on Army stuff and civilian equipment.
Mm-hmm. Let's see.
I think the biggest thing was probably the constant velocity joints. They had three different ones they were using, and they finally settled on one, pretty much.
How about your relationship with higher ranked enlisted men? Was it?
I never had any trouble.
Never. Mm-hmm. How about officers?
Mm-hmm.
Officers?
Yeah. No, I got it down here about some of the things that happened to the officers. So, but no, there was nothing, no trouble.
Okay. Well, yeah, let's talk about your relationship with the officers and whatever you had written down there.
Okay, right here.
Okay. You maybe just want to read that while we got the tape rolling. We can
okay.
Just get it on record.
Okay, when I went in the Army, we were paid $18 a month, and I sent money home to Mom. At the end of the war, I went to Switzerland, and after paying for the trip, I had $19 spending money. I spent $15 on a Swiss chronograph watch. In Davos, I rented a bicycle and returned to Italy broke. In Switzerland, they had served fish 4 days per week. I did not like fish anyway, and they served it with the heads on. The eyes looking at me did not help my appetite any. I also remember the cog railways and the sky trams. Payday was during the first of the month, and a few days later was rations day. We could buy cigarettes, candy, razor blades, and other items. Cigarettes and candy were always rationed. I did not smoke, but bought my cigarette rations to trade for candy later in the month. I always got the best of the trade. In North Africa, at first the Arabs would trade 4 or 5 dozen eggs for a pack of cheaper brand of cigarettes. Later they wanted the best brand of cigarettes for 1 dozen eggs per pack of cigarettes. It snowed in North Africa only once, and we were right on the Mediterranean Sea coast. This was at Bizerte. I went overseas on the USS Evangeline, a luxury liner to Oran, was in Oran about 4 days and then sent to Bizerte on the USS Savannah. Another luxury liner was in our convoy. There were 12 bunks in our stateroom, about the size of an ordinary kitchen. At Bizerte, we used nets on the side of the ship to unload. We then spent most of the day riding the train in a 48 boxcar, arriving at an open field about 2 a.m. We were bedded down in a field, and the next morning, there was a snakeskin stretched out alongside my bedroll. We were sent to a provisional trucking battalion, whose main duty was transporting medical units to seaports for debarkation to Italy. We had Junker trucks, and three of us, using assembly line methods, repaired 100 tires in one day alone. When starting out, 50 trucks were first issued. Because of inexperienced drivers, 35 were wrecked between ordnance and battalion area, approximately 100 miles. The trucking battalion, the 2642nd, was later changed to the 752nd Armored Tank Battalion. We were a lone tank battalion, attached to no other units, and sent wherever help was needed. We got summer clothes in winter and winter clothing in summer. It took 4 days to cross the Mediterranean from North Africa to Italy on LSTs. I got to go on an LST, and we had beautiful weather all the time. Many of the men were seasick all the time. Before going overseas, I was advised to get plenty of lemon drops. The lemon drops did a lot to prevent seasickness. I did not get seasick a single time. I did not have down in here, but most of the crews went over on LCIs, which is landing craft infantry. Mm-hmm. And that they're a smaller ship, and that's why they got seasick. They started rocking even in the harbor. They had bad weather all the time they were on them. I was assigned to a tank retriever crew. I was the only wheeled vehicle mechanic of six retriever crews. Our crew was always first out, which meant we were seldom in the company area. We got to see much more of the back roads and country than the others in our company. I remember one time my half track broke down. I was left alone to get it started. Our company command captain eventually came by asking if I had it running, which I did. He asked me to accompany him on his trip. We went up a zigzag road up a steep baby mountain. The Germans laid down a barrage, moving 20 feet forward or back and then 20 feet up or down. I don't know how we made it to the top without being hit. On the first day in combat, our company was stationed on a hill overlooking a valley approximately 4 miles wide. Fighting was taking place on another hill across the valley where there was a small town. We were set to tow a disabled medical half-track to ordnance repair. We stopped before crossing a bridge to make sure it would hold both vehicles. The medical crew was crouched down inside their vehicle and were scared and white as sheets. We had been shelled, shrapnel marks were on the medical half-track, but inside the retriever we heard nothing. In basic, on one occasion, the second guard shift was made up of truck drivers. On completion of guard shift, we were to check out trucks to transport the company personnel to an area of training. It was the only time I saw the Fort Knox Treasury bullion storage. Our captain gave us orders to stay with the trucks and rest. A smart second lieutenant said everyone goes. He was a cocky know-it-all. I heard he was later shot in the back in combat by one of his own crew. True. Somewhere in Italy, we camped over a sluiceway overnight. We were able to take baths in clean, clear water. The next day, several German bodies flowed by in the sluiceway. In Italy, we received R&R to go to Venice. Several of us crossed to Lido Island in a gondola. Again, I was a truck driver. The drivers got up about 4 a.m. to get the truck ready, then breakfast. After being on the road several hours, we came to a Red Cross donut and coffee stand. Being only 15 or 20 minutes before their opening time, with the donuts being out and coffee made, we were refused service, even after the major explained our long trip on the road and the need to get moving. We were still refused service. The major grabbed a handful of donuts and a cup of coffee and motioned for the others to do the same. When we left there was no donuts left and the coffee was dumped, dousing the fire, and the Red Cross workers were jumping up and down and hollering at us. they were having quite a time. We had a warrant officer named Eshelman who had never been to the front lines. Captain Beardsley said he should see what war was about. The warrant officer was sent with us to repair a tank. The tank was broken down on a rocky knoll. The Germans started shelling and rocks started flying everywhere. The warrant officer took off on the run, scaling a 250-foot bluff before the rest of us could find cover. Upon being ready to return to the company area, we were unable to find him. We reported to the captain. It was about a week later that the warrant officer returned to the camp. When the warrant officer was ready to go home, several of us made him an award using the lid of a number 10 can, a piece of parachute silk, and a large safety pin with above and beyond. When he received the award, his comments were, "I know what this is for and I deserve it." He did pack it with his items to take home. Another time while on the retriever crew, the battalion was moving to another area. At different time, two tanks dropped out with trouble, which put us a ways behind the main group. We then, being last in comm, had fewer problems with our retriever. By the time we were able to get going, we estimated we were over 2 hours behind the end of the comm. Coming to a fork in the road, a dirt road took off to the right. Seeing dust ahead and assuming this to be the way the others were going, we took the dirt road. After about 10 miles, we found the head of the column waiting at a railroad crossing. They had stayed on the paved road, which made a large loop. By using the dirt road, we were in German-held territory and under German cannon fire. The only reason we could give for not being fired upon was that we had the wrecker boom pointed forward and the Germans thought it was a big cannon, and there's pictures of it. On nearing Roma, our company captain met our retriever and told us to come on into Rome as he needed our crew. Just outside Rome, an infantry lieutenant stopped us and refused to let us proceed. We were escorted into an arms manufacturing plant. It was honeycombed underground with tunnels. We traveled almost 1/2 mile through them before finding a way out. Our captain came looking for us, and from the language, I would hate to have been the second lieutenant. On entering Rome, we were ordered to tie the antennas down so as not to tangle with the trolley wires. Several tanks did not get the message as many radios were burned out. We were outside Rome one evening when the captain came by and asked me to go to Rome with him and drive back so he could sleep. It was nearing dark when we went in. While waiting for him, the fog started to roll set in. The nearer the river, the heavier the fog. Hearing some tanks, I started following them. They turned away from the river, going away from our direction. In a short ways, I spotted a bridge that looked somewhat familiar. Taking a chance, I crossed it. The other side was less foggy, and I recognized some landmarks. We got back to the area. The captain said, "I know you could do it." Whew, if he only knew. On a later trip to Rome, I got to see the Fountain of Trevi, the Colosseum, Victor Emmanuel's Monument, the famous balcony from which Mussolini made his speeches, tour of Vatican City, the Sistine Chapel, Michelangelo's ceiling, the catacombs, the Appian Way, Pompeii ruins, and much more. Also, I saw the service station which Mussolini and his girlfriend were hung. On one retriever trip, we were in the mountains on a narrow dirt road. We were towing a tank and having trouble negotiating some terms. An Italian came out of his house and then ran back in, hung, "Americana, Americana." We were the first Americans in that area. He motioned for us to wait, and he got a shovel and went to his olive grove and dug bottles of vino he had hidden from the German troops. We were living in 8-man tents when Mount Vesuvius erupted, and around the clock we kept the ash swept off the tents. The ash grew to several inches deep. There are many orange trees in the area, but we were strongly cautioned not to pick them. Sure was a big temptation to anyway. Back in Africa, a Georgia boy and myself were sent to an army salvage depot to find some truck parts. On the way back, we met a long line of traffic. An Arabian truck going too fast in the opposite direction moved to the side of the road, hit a culvert, and overturned right beside us. A woman and two children riding the back of the truck were left sitting on the ground. Fortunately, no one was sitting, and they were sitting upright. When the truck rolled over, they just let them sit upright on the ground.
Yeah.
The same Georgia boy bought a watermelon from an Arab. Georgia boy kept asking if it was good and kept getting assurance it was. It was not. The Georgia boy waited a few days for the Arab to return. When he did return, the Georgia boy broke 7 or 8 mounds until he found a good one. Good thing we did not know the Arabic language to understand what the Arab was saying, as he seemed to have a large vocabulary. I'm sure with some more time, many more stories would come to mind. These are just some of the best remembered. On the trip home, the rivet heads holding the SS Samuel Johnson together kept popping off. Dolphins swimming off the bow of the ship would dive for them. And then once again here. Once again, changing areas in late afternoon, all along the road, the Italians were hollering and clapping. With the noise of the tanks, we were unable to understand what the celebration was all about. The convoy made a halt. The Italians came from everywhere shouting, "Musso finito." The remote areas knew of Mussolini's death long before any troops heard about it. That night, we camped near a large lake. All night long, it sounded like the 4th of July. On inspection the next day in one of the line companies, not a single hand grenade was found. They had all been used fishing. At the end of the war, all the Italian girls who had been friendly to the German troops were rounded up, taken to a large church, and were shorn of all hair. Over the years, I have tried to put all the gory pictures out of my mind, so you will find none here.
So they took all the women and shaved their heads?
Shaved their heads.
As a punishment?
The rest of her too.
Wow.
And they just had a raider. I didn't go in to see it, but I know some of the other guys went in to see what happened, and they were just completely shaved.
Was that the first time you ever saw death?
Saw what?
Was that the first time you saw death? Was when you were over there? You mentioned the German bodies floating by.
No, we saw other deaths before that in the war. In the war, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We saw more before that. That was just one of the things that, like I said, that's the last. I put all the gory pictures out of mine.
Yeah. Okay. So when you did first see, you know, someone killed in battle, what was your reaction to that?
I don't know what happened to me.
Okay. See, that story when you were talking about the Red Cross not wanting to give you coffee and donuts, how come they didn't want to feed you guys?
Well, I said I was too early, they couldn't open up yet. That was the only excuse they gave.
That's all.
Major, he said, "You're open."
Okay.
I've never had any use for the Red Cross. Dad didn't have any use for the Red Cross either.
Yeah. Did you think they were effective at what they did? Or
no.
Not effective?
When we went to Livorno, I believe it was, we saw a 500 plane raid that morning over the town. We went in that evening, and the next day we stayed in the racetrack area that night, and the next day the Red Cross had a cigarette stand right at the entranceway to the racetrack. They were supposed to give everybody a pack of cigarettes. They gave two cigarettes. They could give you a package of cigarettes a day, they were supposed to the troops. We got two cigarettes, had to sign for them, we could not go back any time that same day. The cigarettes went in the front door, off the American trucks, out the back door onto Italian trucks. We know this happened because we met the trucks in the next day up in the mountains, dispersing them out to the different Italian stores. The Red Cross did not do what they were supposed to be doing.
Okay. Let's see. Where were you when you heard that the war was over on VE Day?
I was at Bolzano. I think I had it down there, didn't I?
You mentioned about Mussolini.
We were in Bolzano then. We were on the way to Bolzano.
Mm-hmm. And what was the general mood?
Well, everybody was happy about it being over, I mean.
Did you?
All looking forward to going home.
I was going to say, did you just start thinking about going home then? And
Yeah, that's when you had, you got 5 points, I think it was, for each year, and 5 points for each child. Of course, one guy had, I think, 5 or 6 children. He wound up about 80-some points, credit points. But he was one of the first ones that got to go home.
Oh, I see. So, they just did it on a point system? And
yeah.
How many points did you have?
I don't know. I just had the service points.
Just a couple of years for service?
Yeah. 30 months overseas.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. How about VJ Day? Where were you?
I don't remember. I don't remember that.
Were you back home yet, or were you still?
No. I was still overseas, but I just don't remember.
Okay. And obviously, you were happy that the war was over.
Oh, yeah.
Looking forward to coming home. What were your expectations once the war ended?
Well, just getting back home to family and girlfriend. And pretty sure I had a job.
Mm-hmm. Did a lot of your other men in your company, did they worry about having a job when they got home? Or?
Well, some hadn't had a job, you know, where they had to take them back, so they were kind of worried about jobs. But.
Yeah. Let's see. What was the trip home like? Long?
3 weeks on the Samuel Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And we ate Thanksgiving dinner going by the Rock of Gibraltar. We ate on deck. The ship broke down. We came back across the North Atlantic, which is kind of rough. The ship broke down twice at sea, and then once outside of Newport News, and I thought they were going to have to unload us outside the port. But they finally got it going enough and got a tug out there to tow us back into port so we could unload it at the port itself.
Let me turn this tape over a little bit.
Okay.